Welcome to Step Into Magic, your weekly online radio show on how to develop your psychic ability, deepen your spirituality, and find your own true purpose. Presented by acclaimed medical intuitive, Josephine Lang. This broadcast is a part of the Wisdom and Intuition Network at metaphysicalwisdom.com. This is Anthony Taylor, your host, and on behalf of Josephine, I'll be taking your calls and questions. This week's topic is a special place of our own for gaining guidance from within. For those of you who are new to our show, Josephine has been a clairvoyant healer for more than 25 years. During that time, she's helped thousands of people from around the world to heal from hard-to-diagnose and chronic health issues. She has also been a teacher and spiritual mentor for hundreds of people who treasure her insights, courage, and love.
Hello, everyone. Today we're going to be taking a nice, deep look at the importance of sanctuary in our lives. And taking time alone allows us to find ourselves and heal ourselves. It lets us regain our interconnectedness and also discover our own unique way of being in the world. And most importantly, time spent in sanctuary helps us to reclaim our more holistic brain. But before I go further into this topic, I always like to begin our show with a spiritual agreement. And this is a gift from my mentor and friend, Jana Massey. And it goes like this, and I ask you all to join me with this agreement now. Together, we acknowledge that everything that we think, that we say, and that we do at this time will be of the highest good. And together, we ask for truth, the understanding of that truth, and the wisdom to use it in our lives. Do you all agree?
I do.
Great. Thanks, Tony.
Josephine, we received a lovely message from Ed from California, and he writes as follows. Hi, Josephine. Thank you for that great show last night. This morning, I received an email from a friend, and it had some interesting quotes. Several years back, I would have interpreted these quotes differently. Today, however, after influences such as your wonderful Step Into Magic show, I see them in a new way. The first is an ancient Chinese proverb. Now, we love this one so much that we made a slide of it. And in honor of Ed, I'm going to try and read it in an American accent.
Very good.
There it is. Okay. Tell me I forget. Show me I remember. Involve me I understand.
Very good.
Anyway, hope you enjoyed that, Ed. Ed goes on to say, and this applies to your show, teaching us about the psychic abilities. The more we are involved, the more easily we progress. And you, dear one, are showing us the way.
Aww.
The second quote is from Joseph Sugarman, who is the famous direct mail guru. And it goes like this. Each problem has hidden in it an opportunity so powerful that it literally dwarfs the problem. Well, the greatest success stories were created by people who recognized a problem and turned it into an opportunity. You've shared this thought with us, that problems are opportunities, but I like the emphasis in, each problem has hidden in it an opportunity so powerful that it literally dwarfs the problem. These were fun for me to read and contemplate, and I just wanted to share. Love, Ed. Well, thank you so much for those, Ed. We really enjoyed receiving them. And when you've got the time, please write to us again.
Yes, please do. That was wonderful, Ed. I really appreciate it. Thanks so very much. And yes, our topic today, sanctuary. You know, we don't realize it seems like having a sanctuary or a place of our own seems like a pretty insignificant thing on the long list of things to do each day. But actually, it's extremely vital for us to really regain our wholeness of ourself and of our brain function. And it's also the way that we can really help ourselves to grow our psychic ability and our spirituality and find our purpose as well. So the way that it happened for me in my life was associated with an injury. And thus I created my sanctuary, and as I did so, I found that I came across four cornerstones for really developing these three aspects of our life, our spirituality, our purpose, and our psychic ability. And those cornerstones are dream interpretation, meditation, prayer, and sanctuary, and they really help us to create that self-actualized life. And when we spend time in dream interpretation or in meditation or in prayer, in our sanctuary, we are really accessing more of our right brain function. Our right brain is more that creative, interconnected part of ourselves. And as we do dream interpretation, we are using our vision center and a very creative part of ourselves as we're doing the deep research on what's going on in our lives or things to watch out for. And then when we are in meditation, we're learning how to control that monkey mind, that really active brain that is constantly coming up with thoughts of the past or the future and, you know, organizing our lives for us. And instead of having our mind run our lives, it's a little easier if we use the practice of meditation to begin to allow our hearts to be the guide of our lives. And the mind was never meant to be the leader. It's always been the heart. And so learning how to access that heart space a little more completely is a really great idea. And then prayer is the way that we open ourselves up to that wisdom. Not only do we ask, but we also receive, and we can give thanks and gratitude. And we can also become one with that part of ourselves that is divine. So all of those cornerstones are really essential for us in opening ourselves up in this way. And sanctuary is one of those very vital cornerstones. Often underestimated, but really an important part of our lives. And, of course, all of this needs to be done on the base of self-love. That's the foundation underneath the cornerstone. So our self-love is what lets us take the time to give to ourselves what we need in our lives. It's our self-love is how we how we embrace ourselves and accept ourselves just exactly as we are and learn how to give ourselves what we need in our lives to really fulfill our purpose, to help us find why we've actually come here as individuals. And Tony, maybe you can show that next slide for us.
Certainly.
This is a little quote from Pico Ayer, who is a British novelist. And he says that finding a sanctuary, a place apart from time, is not so different from finding a faith.
Mm.
Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
So as I was saying, our sanctuary is a very basic part of our humanity, and it's where we engage the spiritual journey and really refresh our souls. But it has fallen progressively out of popularity in our culture and in our way of being in the world as our left brain dominance has continued to rise. So that left brain is the more orderly side of ourselves. It's thinking of the past and thinking of the future. It's analyzing. It thinks linearly. And that part of ourselves is more prone towards connecting through, say, means like cell phones or computer screen time or chat rooms, that sort of thing, rather than actual time spent in interconnectedness, really being with somebody or being on our own. And another sort of an expression of our left brain is that television-type time or busyness all the time, keeping ourselves constantly stimulated outside of ourselves, rarely going within. Whereas when we're in our sanctuary and we've really created a sacred space for ourselves, we have the opportunity there to access our right brain, our oneness, and our connection with everything. And that is why those practices of meditation and prayer and dream work that we love to do in our sanctuary are so helpful for us. They really help us to become completely interconnected in our place of being. And that's what our psychic source is. That's how we develop our psychic ability. Of course, if we are interconnected and we're really understanding that connection between ourselves, that does allow us to be able to perceive in other realms. And as well, time spent in sanctuary allows for the return of the feeling sense as a guidance system in our lives. You know, so often we disregard our feelings. You know, kids are not terribly happy about being in class, in school sometimes, but they're taught that they have to do that. And so they're taught to disregard their feelings. Whereas it can be so refreshing if someone lets a child actually do what they feel like doing. Now, of course, within reason, and a good parenting will always help us to guide a child, but to guide them through letting them see the results of their consequences of their actions, and so that they can see how they feel about maybe going to the park now or later or whatever it is. So it's nice for us to learn how to feel our way again, to reclaim that. I think we often lose that. It is kind of drummed out of us in childhood in our left brain dominant culture. So additionally, our guts, our actual, you know, intestines, are very alive with bacteria, and those bacteria absolutely respond to our own feelings and reflect the conditions of our environment. There was a wonderful test that was done at the HeartMath Institute that I saw in a film, a movie called I Am, where the yogurt was sitting in a bowl on a table in front of a man, and he was asked to, you know, think thoughts of something that was uncomfortable for him in his life, negative feelings. And as he did, the little barometer that was in the yogurt reflected those feelings, that the yogurt was picking up on those. And then he was asked to think joyous and happy thoughts, and the same thing happened with the yogurt. The yogurt's barometer went more towards the happy side, mm-hmm. The good excitement. And so we know that this is the case with the bacteria in the yogurt in the bowl, and the same is true for the bacteria that's in our own intestines. And horses have a really wonderful communication system that they have through their what's known as the enteric nervous system. And the enteric nervous system is very like that. It's in their intestines. And if one horse in the herd has a concern, like maybe a distant bicyclist or something, and they're looking like, I don't know if that's such a good idea, all of the horses will feel that one horse's gut reaction. So even if they're dozing and sleeping, they'll suddenly wake up and feel that, what's going on in me, because they all share that common gut response from the bacteria in their intestines. And so this is a very interesting way that we can look at how we can be interconnected with each other. And we have that enteric nervous system too, but we've really culturally disconnected from it through our societal programming and through our left brain viewpoints. But it's this sense of feeling that we can reclaim when we spend time in our sanctuary, remembering who we are and allowing ourselves to have access to our right brain.
That's amazing, Josephine. I'd never really thought of it that way.
So our right brain also puts us in touch with the truth of our abundance. As we understand our oneness, our food, our water, and our wealth distribution and disparity issues evaporate, and we can see clearly that there is and always will be enough. And that's truly the case. We know that. We grow enough food. The sun is abundantly putting forth persistently and unendingly its energy, and we can use that energy. And our water is also abundant and beautiful, but we have, you know, all kinds of problems with that sort of left brain mindset of let's grab this or let's hold that, or we don't know how to really get things distributed properly, or we have fear, and so we need to hold on to more for ourselves. And when we step into that oneness, we see that that's all becomes insignificant and unnecessary. And so those distribution and disparity issues just go away. They just leave us. And it's the delusions and the dominance of our left brain orientation that creates these concepts of scarcity and isolation and separation. So back to sanctuary. That's where we focus on our being nature rather than our doing nature, and we reclaim our feeling sense, aided by the dream work and the meditation and the prayer on the base of self-love. And these practices, along with time spent alone, just being ourselves, helps us to find our way back into our birthright of a full and capable right brain function in balance with the left brain function. I wrote an article for the New Age News, which is an online news magazine, and it's a beautiful magazine. It's about spirituality and developing ourselves in that holistic way. And I'd like to just read a little excerpt from the article that I wrote on sanctuary for you. So it goes like this. Sanctuary is so much a part of who we are that we seek it even in childhood. When I was very young, I can remember slipping with the stealth of a well-practiced spy into a group of shrubs that graced the edge of my neighbor's yard along the sidewalk. No one knew I was there. My brothers zooming by on their bikes, and even total strangers walking with their dogs could pass within inches of me, and still I remained undetected. I would go there to lick my wounds or just to have a moment's peace from the intertwined energies of family life. Lying back on the cool gray ground, I'd gaze up through the canopy of green leaves into the fathomless blue sky above, and my mind would bathe itself in the clarity of nothingness. So that was an example of what we do in childhood. We do find those kinds of times to just be who we are, to just be me.
Yeah, that sounded absolutely fantastic. Yeah, it awakened in me sort of memories of childhood like that too.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And then I used to do it in my teens a lot in my horse's corral, Duchess's corral. I'd go out there and sit with her on the hay as she would be munching away. And sometimes, you know, I'd go out there because I felt sad, or sometimes I just wanted to just take a little break, or just go out and be with my horse and just have that company and the quiet, and she'd be munching away, and it was a lovely feeling, very meditative. And she was, of course, very empathetic and very sympathetic, and so however I was feeling, as horses do, she would mirror and reflect that to me. So if I was needing a little comforting, she'd come over and just nuzzle me and hold me by putting her head right against my body. Or if, you know, I was feeling kind of happy, we'd kind of mess around together in the corral. And what was really interesting to me is that my family really honored that time. It was right out, her corral was right outside the kitchen window. And I remember many times hearing, you know, them saying, oh, so where's Josephine? You know, she should be da-da-da-da. Oh, she's out in the corral. Oh, okay, well, let's just leave her out there. So, and it was a beautiful little place. It was under a shade of a beautiful big oak tree, and it had a lovely view of the lake beyond. And it was a really nice place to be.
So, Josephine, do you think that that really helped at a young age for you to develop a strong sense of self, sense of purpose, that you did spend, you know, time alone, you know, in sanctuary with your feelings and your thoughts?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's one of the things that we somehow let slip away from us as we enter into adulthood, though we don't need to. And we can hold on to it by creating sanctuaries for ourselves.
Yeah, and it's harder now for children to find those sanctuaries outside.
Yeah.
Because we don't give them the same freedoms that we enjoyed when we were growing up, just to be outside on our own
so
at
true.
A much younger age, you
so
know,
true.
Just to explore.
Yeah, us kids were always encouraged to just be wild outside. Go outside and play. That's
yeah.
what we heard a lot of.
Off you go in the morning and don't come back.
Yeah. And it was great. And we would, you know, wander around and explore the wildlife and really get a sense of who we are. Just,
mm-hmm.
you know, really knowing ourselves. It's a very important thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's you know, there's a lot of credit and beautiful things about today's child rearing as well, you know, teamwork and soccer practice and all that. I think that there's a lot of fun that happens there too, just so long as there's still also made time for the time to be alone and with yourself, exploring in nature. So I've got a little exercise for us about acknowledging our sanctuaries. So if you want, why don't you join us and take a couple of relaxed and easy deep breaths. And, of course, if you're driving a car or operating machinery, you'd want to save this for another time. But in the meanwhile, just go ahead and settle in and close your eyes if you like. And see if you can't remember a time in childhood where you had a place where you felt comfortable and safe and protected. See if you can remember the feeling of simply being you. No distractions, just being yourself. And now leaving that time in childhood, see if you can't find a time where that happened for you in your teenage years, where you were safe and protected, where you felt comfortable, where you could just be yourself. Now, if you were one of the lucky ones, you may have hung on to that into your young adulthood. Go ahead and take the time to explore back in your memory. Just see if you can recall a time when you were alone, just being who you are. Maybe it was on a hike or lying by the beach. Lying on the beach by the shore. And now currently, see if you can just take the time right now to just feel and be yourself. No distractions, just you. Relax right into that state of being. And now take another relaxed and easy breath and just let yourself come right back to your own normal waking consciousness. And that's all. Just this tiny moment is all we need to help ourselves remember who we are. How was that for you, Tony?
Yes, very nice. You know, it was It was interesting because it was actually quite easy for me to do that in my early childhood, much harder to do it in my teens, and then quite easy for me to do it again, you know, in my early adulthood.
Nice.
But it's something very intangible, something ineffable, this sense of beingness that you're describing, this feeling that it's me, not anyone else, but there's no words to describe it.
It is, isn't it?
It's beyond description. It's kind of like, it's the mystery, really.
It is the mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Good job. So, yeah, it's a very important thing for us to do. And, in fact, contemporary research shows that we do this a lot as children, and we tend to lose it in adulthood. Yet the adults who retain this ability and take moments during their days to just be retain a really high degree of creativity, rather like what we experience in childhood. But there's something like only, 2% of adults in our Western culture who do retain the ability from childhood, the ability to simply take periodic moments of doing nothing and just be themselves. And, you know, that creativity that comes with this is very much a right brain function. And in childhood, especially in our younger years, we've not yet fully been conditioned or trained out of our right brains. We experience far lower degrees of left brain dominance. So our time as adults spent in sanctuary, in a safe place that we love, where we're comfortable and can spend time simply being, is extremely important, not only individually, but also culturally. And it might just bring about those changes that are so needed right now in our world.
Mm.
You took that class that I gave on sanctuary at Cuesta College, didn't you?
I certainly did, Josephine, and a really special class it was, too. Yes, I've still got very vivid memories. It was more than a year ago now, and I remember that you sent us outside to see if we could just find sanctuary in nature, and for me that was a really powerful experience. And I also found lots of things in nature to make my own sanctuary, too. Yes, it made a profound impression on me.
And as I recall, when we went outside, there was this amazing sunset right at the time when we went outside.
Oh, it was truly beautiful, and I had an intense experience of bliss just being outside, gazing at the sky, watching the birds and all the fields and the trees and the distant mountains. The really clear blue sky that you can get on a California evening. Yeah, it was really special.
Yeah, and that's really what we're after, too, that bliss state. The bliss state is a phenomenal state in our consciousness, and that's a part of the beingness. And that's, of course, where spontaneous remission from disease occurs. All of those cases of spontaneous remissions of cancers and things, the one thing that they have in common is that there is a sense of the bliss state.
Mm-hmm. And it's true in terms of what you were saying before about the right brain and the left brain. It's in that moment, all of those left brain concerns that you were describing, they just disappear.
They do.
There is no email to answer or little job that needs doing or bank balance to worry about or whatever. It's just in that pure moment where everything is just what you're experiencing in that moment.
Yeah, it's the hallmark of the right brain.
Mm-hmm.
So my own sanctuary that I created was a really beautiful little room that we had in our house that we, had a bunch of stuff in there, and it was sort of a partially guest room. But when I had that big pelvis injury, I needed to spend a lot of time lying down. And, of course, lying down in bed is great, but after a while bed gets to be a little old and you want to go lie down somewhere else. So I'd go lie down in the living room and I might watch a video or something for a little bit of time. But even that, too much of that is too much. So maybe one of those every other day or so. And so we kind of cleared out, Frank helped me, and we cleared out this little room, this little guest bedroom, and we got a massage table. And we set that up in there, and that we learned a little bit about massage. We had a friend come in and teach us some tricks that helped me with my healing, and Frank would give me a wonderful little massage every night in 5 or 10 minutes just before bed. And when he did, I would wake up with much less pain in the mornings, and it really was a main day of my healing from that big injury. And as the days and weeks went along, we found that, I found that it was really nice to just spend time hanging out on the massage table. It was more comfortable than the floor or the bed after I'd slept in the bed all night. And so we started kind of clearing things out of that room. I used to store the horses' saddles and bridles in there, and I moved those out into a shed. And then I just got some interesting healing books and cleared off the top of a china cabinet that we had in there and created a little altar on top of the china cabinet. And one of the things that happened just shortly before that injury was I came across that poem by St. Francis of Assisi. And maybe you can show that slide for us, Tony.
Certainly.
And I sort of edited it and rewrote it a little bit in a non-denominational version just for myself. And I've since found that this poem was not only a starting place for me on my spiritual journey, but it's also been a really strong starting place for many others. And, you know, perhaps it has inspired all of you as well. It's a beautiful, beautiful poem. And, Tony, why don't you read this one for us?
Oh, I'd love to. In this life of mine, let me be an instrument of peace. Where there is hatred, let me show love. Where there is injury, let me give pardon. Where there is doubt, let me have faith. Where there is darkness, let me spread light. Where there is sadness, joy. May I not so much seek to be understood as to understand. May I not so much seek to be loved as to love. Then miracle shall follow miracle, and wonders shall never cease.
Thank you so much. Isn't that a beautiful poem?
Yes, it is a beautiful poem.
Really a great little guide.
Mm-hmm.
And so in my healing sanctuary, I actually, early on in the injury there, I had painted a picture of a child standing by the edge of a pond with all sorts of animals around, foxes and birds and horses and camels. And, you know, it was just sort of a fanciful, fun picture. And I wrote that poem on there. And then I gave it to my niece when she was born, shortly right around that time. But I kept a photograph of it, and I decided to set that on top of the china hutch that we'd cleared off. And I also put, you know, some candles to represent the four directions and some, you know, little things, favorite things from nature, a nice little cloth to set stuff on and some stones and a few photos of my loved ones, you know, Frank and my mom and dad and my family members and dear friends. And then a little horse statue, of course. And then over that cabinet, Frank helped me to hang a mirror. That was a mirror that my older brother gave me for my birthday, I think it was. And I would sit sometimes on the massage table and light the candles at night and just gaze into my eyes and just let myself find that place of beingness again. And I would also do it in meditation. And I would also practice my self-love affirmations and look into my eyes deeply and tell myself that I loved myself just exactly as I am. And we're going to go more deeply into the topic of self-love later this month, so we'll touch on that a lot more then. But it's such an important basis for our foundation, for the growth of our souls and the growth of ourselves. And so that mirror was a wonderful thing to have above my little altar space in my sanctuary. And then later I got some, you know, statuary. I think I got a beautiful little laughing Buddha down at our local Chinese shop and a statue of Kuan Yin as well, who stands with her infinite compassion at the reflecting pool, accepting everyone. And also, of course, St. Francis. And with that, my little altar really felt complete.
And that sounds like a wonderful sanctuary. And one day maybe I'll aspire to have a sanctuary like that. It's interesting you should mention St. Francis, because when I was researching my book, The Sacred Sites Bible, I found out many interesting things about him. I mean, he was reputed to be a very gentle man. And the people say that he was so in touch with nature that he would give sermons to the birds.
Isn't that beautiful?
Isn't that amazing?
I love it. So creating a sanctuary is something that all of us can do. And, you know, you can have a more elaborate one like mine by appropriating a room, or I've known of many people who've just actually appropriated a closet or the back porch or something like that. I think that a lot of people very commonly will just let their garden be their sanctuary, and boy, could there ever be a better one. I don't think so. So when we are spending our time outside in the garden and we're cultivating, you know, and weeding and planting, we're really touching truth, I think. It was one of the wonderful things that I loved about my gardening business that I had for so many years, was that it's just a delight to be outside and handling plants and working with them all day and touching the soil. But sanctuaries can also be very simple affairs. You can always grab the back seat of the car and let that be your sanctuary, the place where when I'm out there, don't bother me. I'm doing my meditation. Or, you know, it can be just out in nature somewhere. It's a really easy thing to do. It can be really anywhere. And like I said, they can be kind of elaborate like mine, or they can be very simple. And it's the place where we grow ourselves. Not only do we grow our plants in our garden, but we grow ourselves. And we can do our process, we can do our inner work, we can do our forgiveness, we can do our shadow work, we can look at how the world is reflecting our inner environment. And you know that wonderful quote, maybe you could show that slide by Carl Jung, the famous Swiss psychiatrist and psychotherapist.
Certainly, Josephine. And whilst I'm doing that, I ought to tell you that we do have the caller from San Luis Obispo back on the line.
Oh, good, good, good.
And but we also have another caller wishing to speak to you. Here we go, then.
All right, thank you.
Yes, welcome.
Hi,
yes.
Josephine. Yeah, Josephine, I know you have a great knowledge concerning dreams.
Yes, I've worked with them for many, many years.
Yeah, from my early 20s, I've had these experiences. I will be out somewhere, maybe walking. I could be in company. I could be anywhere. And it might be someone coming towards me in the street.
Uh-huh.
And it might be someone I know, someone I don't know. But as they approach me, or all these, when I've had these experiences, I get a terrible feeling in the pit of my stomach. And I always know I am, after I've seen a person or something has been said, I know the next thing is going to happen. And when it does, I get this terrible feeling of nausea. The last time I can remember it, I was in Mallorca with friends last year. I didn't know I'd only met Peter. It's one of my golfing friends. Son, we were sitting down to have shepherd's pie, and as Roger's son put the shepherd's pie on the table, I knew he was going to put it on the table, and I knew his father, Roger, was going to say to him, "Where's the pepper and salt?" And that's exactly what happened. Now, these experiences, in my early 20s, I've had all these experiences, and I always have the same feeling. I get a terrible feeling in the pit of my stomach when I see the scene that I know I've already seen, and I always know the next part of the scene, what it's going to be. And when it happens, it confirms in my mind that I was right what's going to be said, then I get this terrible feeling of nausea. It probably lasts about half a minute. Then it just disappears. And these are dreams. It wouldn't be a dream I could say I had, you know, a few weeks ago. It could be something that I probably hadn't dreamt about for maybe 2 or 3 years. It's just something that happens. And over since my early 20s, and as you know, I'm quite getting on now, this has still occurred on occasions. And I just wondered if you might have any idea what it might be, why I get this feeling of nausea and this terrible feeling in the pit of my stomach.
Yes, this is a very interesting question. And now, this happens to you when you are asleep and dreaming, or does it happen during the waking state?
No, it happens in the waking state. If you were to ask me today, did I have a dream last night, I wouldn't be able to tell you. It's when these experiences happen, I know straight away I've dreamt about it.
I've dreamt about it.
And then, to confirm the dream, I always know, the scene sets my mind going to say, I dreamt this. And
that
gives me this feeling, a terrible feeling in the pit of my stomach. And what confirms it to me is that I know the next part of the scene, if you follow what I'm saying.
Happen. Yeah,
what's
like,
happen?
Like when he said, where's the
and
salt?
When it happen, and when it happens, and I know it's going to happen, but I get this terrible feeling of nausea.
Wow, that is really an extraordinary experience. I've never heard anything quite like it. But it's interesting because it's also very like the what we call the deja vu experience, the foreknowing experience, where we don't, you know, suddenly we know the next thing that's going to happen. And I've often heard of people having that experience, but I've never heard of anybody having this profound nausea associated with it.
Right.
And usually the difference between that is that they maybe have not necessarily dreamed it. They just have a knowing about it. But in your case, you're pretty certain that you've dreamt it the night before.
Yeah, I mean, you see, sometimes it can be people I've never even seen before. I could be walking down the street and someone's coming towards me, or maybe a bus might be going by. And as I know the bus is going by, I know I'm going to look up and, you know, I've never ever told anybody this because I think, you know, in my own mind, I thought, well, if I told anybody it, they'd, you know, think I was off my rocker or something.
Oh, no, I don't think you're off your rocker at all. Actually, what I think you are is quite a bit psychic, is probably what this is. My guess is that this is like a double deja vu of some sort. I'm just guessing here because I don't know. We haven't, you know, worked a long time on this or anything together. But since you have the strong sense that you've dreamt it the night before, and since it sounds...
Well, no, I haven't dreamt it the night before. I've dreamt it at some time. It isn't something I've dreamt about the night before it happened. I've dreamt about it. I know in my own subconscious mind, well, in my mind at the time, as it's happening, I know I've dreamt about this sometime way past, going way back. It's never been any sort of order to it. It might be, I think, you know, if you say, well, I've dreamt this and then it happened, and then I've dreamt something else and happened. I dream something and I say, well, you know, it's ages since I dreamt about that. In my own mind, I know.
That is just extraordinary, and what an interesting experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm so glad you called to tell
us about
it.
I thought you might know, with your great knowledge of dreams and all that, sort of things, that you might have some sort of idea. It's the nausea part of it that I've never been understand why. Why I always have this. Yeah, the striking of the scene sets a terrible feeling in the pit of my stomach, and you can say the completion of the dream is me knowing the next thing that's going to happen, and that's when I get the feeling of nausea.
Yeah, and what's kind of nice is that it sounds like usually these scenes are kind of benign, like nothing really terrible happens.
No, that's right. They're just mundane things, really. You know, like just like saying the pepper and salt. You haven't put the pepper and salt on the table. It was just an ordinary scene.
I mean, what would be really scary is if every time that happened, something terrible actually took place. That would be.
But Joy just said to me, you know, a little while ago, nothing ever bad happens out of it. I said, no, nothing ever bad has happened to it.
Isn't that great? That's a wonderful thing. But, you know, it seems to me like perhaps the nausea is just your own, you know, gut reaction of knowing that you're going to know, and how that is a mystery, and how that is something that we can't explain using our logical left brains. It's really out of the realm of our normal day-to-day function. And so because of that, it's going to set us a little bit on edge. And that deja vu idea, you know, the idea of having that foreknowing, is one of those psychic areas that has long been a puzzler to humanity. Yeah. How do we know that? And if we can know it in something like this, these mundane scenes, wouldn't it be great if we could know it for something that was bigger or more important, like preventing a child from being injured or something like that? What a great skill that could be if we could really develop it. So it seems to me like just in the context of our cultural society that doesn't like people to have these kinds of experiences because it doesn't fit in with our normal, logical, reasonable approach to the world, that alone could explain for me the nausea, that, you know, because it doesn't fit in with our paradigm. But yet here you have this very clear and repeated experience of knowing what's going to happen beforehand. And not only in the moment of knowing what's going to happen beforehand, but you've also had a dream of it sometime in the past.
Yeah, I've always known. It has been, you know, it all been clear in my mind that I've dreamt it.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Because it's a doubly strong psychic hit, you know?
Yeah.
So I would say that to me, it sounds to me like this is just a really strong psychic sense, a really strong psychic skill that you have. And because it hasn't fit in with our cultural paradigm, your body has had a reaction like, uh-oh, I don't know how I can know this.
Yeah.
How,
yeah.
What is this about? You know, entered into
yeah.
the mystery. Well, thank you so much for calling this in. It's
yeah,
silly,
anyway, thanks
very
much for talking
experience.
To you, Josephine. Okay.
Oh, sure, you're welcome. All right, we'll talk to you later then.
Yeah, okay
bye for
then.
Now.
Yeah, bye for now.
Bye.
Oh, well, that was really, really interesting.
That was very intriguing. Yes, indeed it was. You know, but if our caller is still on the line, the other caller.
Certainly.
Let's go
okay.
ahead and ask her to, or him to come on.
Welcome to Step Into Magic.
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, this is Anna.
Oh, hi, Anna. How are you today?
I'm fine. And I was, oh, that was so interesting what he was saying. And I had an experience that's kind of like that, but, you know, where it's kind of shocking when something happens and it's, like you said, outside the paradigm. So what has gone on is that I've had the privilege of studying with you years ago. And
yes,
being,
it was such a lovely time.
Oh, it was just
really
a few weeks, but it was absolutely
together.
Precious. And I got to be in your sanctuary, which was exquisite. I mean, I've got goosebumps all over me telling you because I can see the window behind us and the light coming through, and oh God, it was just exquisite.
Yeah.
But
oh,
I was having difficulty at the time of doing a meditation and taking notes, and so you helped me out one evening. And you graciously had me lay down on your massage table, and I got to go into meditation and relax, and you took my notes of what I was experiencing. And so I'd like to tell that tonight, if you would let me,
yeah.
please. Okay. Well,
please,
what happened was that I was traveling the universe, and then I came upon a pathway that led me to a very, very, very old door. And the door was so old, I was like, oh, man, I am not going to be able to touch that door. It's just going to disintegrate in my fingers, you know. And you said,
yeah.
no, go ahead. Go ahead and open it. And I'm like, Josephine, this is old. This is really old. I'm telling you, I can see it right now. And, you know, you're just like, it's okay, open the door. And I'm like, okay. And so I open the door, and this exquisite, gigantic, beautiful tree is in front of me. I mean, it was huge, and it had big branches on it, and the leaves were exquisitely green. Oh, it was gorgeous. And so I'm telling you this. I'm telling you that it's a tree. It's a tree, and it's gigantic, and it's exquisite. And then on top of the tree is this huge angel, just gigantic angel on top of this gigantic
wow.
tree. And I'm going, my God, it's Archangel Michael. I knew intuitively that it was Archangel Michael. And the tree was shaped like the trunk was my spine, and the tree was, the top of the tree was like a brain. And the tree,
huh.
top of the tree started to spin, and it spun so much that it really did look like a brain. It really started completely forming
huh.
into a brain. And then it came towards me, and I said to you as I was in the meditation and you're taking my notes, and I'm saying, I'm getting downloaded, you know.
Oh.
And after a few seconds, I mean, I really became frightened because I felt like my brain was tearing. I mean, I really had the sensation that the energy was so strong that I was actually going to have a physical experience at the same time. And so you said, well, just, you know, tell Archangel Michael to just, you know, if he could just slow the energy down a little bit, and he did. And so I still stayed there, and the energy still kept coming through my body. I was dizzy, to say the least.
I bet.
And so afterwards, after that happened and the energy stopped, I sat up and we talked about it a couple of minutes. And I sat in my chair, but I mean, you know, we're both kind of just looking at each other because, I mean, I'm in complete shock. And so a few minutes later, I leave the house, leave your sanctuary, walk down the hallway, say goodbye to Frank, go out the door, get in my car. It's dark. It's dark outside. The car radio light turns on, and the voice says, he is your guide. And I thought,
wait, so the radio turned
the
on?
The radio light turned on, and the voice said, he is your guide. And I thought, okay. So I got it. The light shuts off. I get out of the car. I go back to your door, knock on the door, tell you the whole thing. I'm holding my keys. Josephine, I have not turned this car on. The radio was not on. The light came on. The voice said, he is your guide. And you looked at me and you said, isn't that great? That's it, huh? Okay. We both say goodnight to each other a second time. I walk back to the car praying this time that nothing else is going to happen except the engine is going to turn over. I mean, I didn't even touch the radio still. I mean, I didn't turn it on. I didn't try it on. I didn't listen to see if there was any music. I didn't do anything. Just leave the radio off. Just turn the engine on, you know? And I drove home. Oh, my God.
That's so great.
It was, I just want the audience to know that the way you are on the radio, the way you are on this program is exactly the way you are when a person is with you and during sanctuary time and during lesson time. Oh, it's just the most exquisite experience. I just can't thank you enough. I just can't thank you enough.
Thank you, Anna.
Oh, God.
Oh, I really
thank
appreciate
you.
That. Now that you've told the story, I do have a memory of that a little bit of us.
Oh, my. Well, you know, I mean, you have so many. See, that was mine. That was mine. You said, isn't that great? I thought, okay, okay.
It was great.
It was great. But I kind of wanted you to do a jig with me, you know. I mean, so I thought I better just turn around and go back to the car, you know. Something else will happen to me. So thank you, Josephine.
Oh, that's a wonderful story. Thank you so much for calling it in. That's just great.
Okay, I'll talk to you later.
All right. Really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Bye now.
Bye. Bye, Tony. Bye, Frank.
Goodbye. Bye.
So I lucked out. I do have this beautiful room that I can call my sanctuary, and it's a wonderful place. And I do my medical intuitive readings in here, and I see students, and I'm here right now for the radio show. And it's a wonderful thing. I have a view of the mountain, and I get to look out at the trees and the sky and the mountaintop and the garden with its persimmons and its blackberries. And, you know, it's a beautiful thing to have a place like that. But like I was saying earlier, you know, it's just as beautiful to just go stand out in nature somewhere, or like that bliss experience that you had in the class at Sanctuary at Cuesta College there, Tony, where you just stood out in nature for a moment and ta-da, there you were, one with everything. Mm-hmm. So our slide, it says, and this is from Carl Jung.
Oh, yeah, we kind of like lost that a little bit, didn't we?
Yeah.
Cool, I was thinking. Yeah, let's get back to that slide. We do actually have a message. Well, I'll get to that in a moment. About our caller from San Luis Obispo.
Okay. And the slide is from Carl Jung, and it says, one does not become enlightened by imagining figures of light, but by making the darkness conscious. And that's one of the things that I love so much about our earlier caller who was just speaking about that feeling in the pit of the stomach. A lot of times when we, you know, hold things in and we don't let others know about them because we're afraid of judgment, they can be dark. But if we bring them out into the light of day, air them off, shake them out, get them on a radio show and say, this is what's happened. Sometimes those kinds of experiences can just lighten all in there, all just with something like that, just like letting it come out and get a little air. So that's a beautiful thing.
Yeah, very profound.
Yeah, and I have a little homework assignment. Should we do that after this next message, or?
I'll give it. It's very brief.
All right, that sounds
great. I give it some advice, and it's anonymous. It's from one of our listeners.
All right.
And he or she writes, Sometimes nausea can be a rush of spiritual power. He can give it back to the earth if that's the case.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you for writing in, and it's so true. We can experience nausea when we have a rush of spiritual power, and that's a wonderful thing to do. That's beautiful advice, to just give it back to the earth. I used to have this favorite masseuse that I would sometimes see up the Big Sur, and he would give all of his massages standing in the flowing hot water from the hot springs there. He set up had his table right on a little area there and would just stand in the water, because he said as he was pulling things out of people's bodies by, you know, sometimes massage can reach into some very deep held emotional stuff. And he would just give it to the water and let it flow to the great vast Pacific Ocean. And when we do give whatever these surges are of energy back to the earth, it's a wonderful place to do it. It's a wonderful way to do it. So thank you so much for that little wonderful piece of advice. Beautiful. So I'll go ahead and give our little homework assignment now then.
Okay.
So this is something for you to explore this week while you're out and about. I'd love for you to see if you can't make yourself a little traveling altar. And you might find a little tiny box. I have a friend who used a little breath mint box, a tiny little box. I have another friend who's used a little cloth bag that she had, about 4 or 5 inches square. And just some sort of container that appeals to you. It could be decorative, could be small, could be larger. And then if you like, find something, an item from nature that feels right to you. Could be a feather or a piece of bark that maybe has a little design on it, or maybe a stone, or both, or all three. and then maybe get yourself a little tiny piece of cloth that you can fold up and put inside of that box or inside of that bag, so that when you get to some place where you want to just have a little quiet sanctuary time, you can pull that out and pull out the cloth and spread it out and then set the item from nature or two on there. And maybe you might have even a little candle, if you'd like, and some matches in that cloth if you want to gaze into the candlelight. Or perhaps a photograph of a spiritual teacher or of a family member or somebody that you'd like to have with you, something that's significant, anything really, all things that are small and things that are significant to you. And just create a little mobile sanctuary for yourself and set it aside and use it when you need it. Take it with you when you travel.
Well, that sounds excellent, Josephine. I mean, I'm still thinking back to the exercise that you gave us earlier. And I'm thinking, what I really need is a quiet place where I'm not going to be interrupted if I'm going to connect with that feeling of beingness that you were describing before and connecting with the right brain.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I'm remembering that, you know, as a writer, I really do value having a quiet place. And in the past, I used to like having a quiet and a dark place.
Yes.
And I used to do my writing in a bedroom late at night when it was very quiet. And, you know, I've missed that because now I'm too tired at night. And it would be good for me to re-find a sanctuary, a quiet place. And I feel like it's much easier for inspiration to come to us when we're not being bombarded by noise, you know, or lights, text messages, emails, whatever. Or even, you know, sometimes the sounds of cars going by or whatever it is, or people on the street. I do really like that quietness that you can get in a sanctuary.
Yes, and we're all entitled to darkness as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're kind of taught fear as children, and we're taught to be afraid of the dark, and we're taught that, you know, white is good and black is bad or whatever, you know, things out of our distant and demented past that came down through to us. And really, darkness is beautiful. And
I know, and that really connects in with the Carl Jung quote, doesn't it?
It does. It does. And, you know, I too, when I was in my early adulthood, I would sometimes retreat from the hubbub of the family business by just, you know, people coming and going. We had this one stairwell that had a door at the bottom and a door at the top and a light bulb. And I'd often go in there and turn off the light and just sit in the stairwell. Or if I needed a little light, I might open up the top door and have a little natural light come in. And I could write in there. It was really nice. And I remember hearing that J.K. Rowling had a very unusual sanctuary, you know, who wrote the Harry Potter books. When she first began, she used to write in a laundromat, And then later, I think you were sharing with me that she was having some writer's block with one of her books, and she remembered that she wrote very well in the lobby of a hotel in Edinburgh, and she went out there and went ahead and picked up her writing again and wrote the whole next book in that lobby.
No, when she went back, she actually was rich enough to hire
get a room. Oh, that was it.
Oh, she could have had a suite of rooms, but I think she just made do with one.
Yeah, that's so wonderful.
And it had a view, and it was quiet, and it had good association.
Yes.
Well, on that note, Josephine, on that positive note, I feel I should let you know that we really are very near the end.
Oh, dear, not
again. I know. And there's so much more to be said about this topic of sanctuary. But the good news is we are coming back to it next week.
Yes, we are. In fact, we've got several weeks this month that we'll be talking about it. So
yeah.
Plenty of time.
So let me say then that the link to next week's show can be found on Josephine's website at stepintomagic.com. Simply click on the top menu for radio. And if you have a question for us or would like to be included in our weekly newsletter, just go to the contact page on Josephine's website again. It's stepintomagic.com, and you can send us a message. So, Josephine, are there any parting words that you'd like to say?
Oh, yes, and thank you so much for that, Tony. In closing, I'd like to say that having a sanctuary or a special place of our own is one of our deepest human needs. And it puts us in touch with our right brain function of oneness, abundance, spiritual direction, and guidance, along with opening us up to our interconnectedness and our psychic ability. Having a sanctuary can seem like an insignificant detail, but really it is a vastly important aspect of our lives. And I'd like to thank you all for giving me the gift of your time tonight, and I'll finish with this little blessing, again a gift from my dear friend and mentor, Jana Massey. It goes like this. As our gifts are given in love, they are received in love. And we honor their wise use and their increase for all concerned.
Thank you so much for that, Josephine. As always, it's been a real pleasure talking with you this evening. And I trust that everyone listening has learned lots about the importance of a special place of our own. This has been show number SA-1.14. And if you've enjoyed the show, we really hope that you will tell your friends. We look forward to having all of you join us next week, when Josephine will be talking about creating sacred space, making an altar for yourself.
Tony and I wish you all insight, wisdom, and magic as you pursue the journey of inner knowing, and I hold you all in light and in love. Thank you so much for listening. This is Josephine Lang. Until next week, good night.